case this morning, U.S. versus Irving.
May it please the court, my name is Jeremy Carlin. I'm here on behalf of defendant Darian Darvin Irving. It's an interesting case that we have here for you today. I think the ultimate question is whether or not any risk of bodily injury means a substantial risk of serious bodily injury.
This was a pretty violent struggle.
Well, I've been a defense lawyer for 15 years, and I think there's a spectrum of violence in a struggle or not. I don't necessarily believe, given the fact in the number of cases that we see where they apply this sentencing guideline where a defendant is reaching for a gun or reaching for a gun that he perhaps thought he might have, is getting the police officer's taser or pepper spray, those circumstances where a defendant is using a dangerous instrumentality, I would concede absolutely that that is a very violent struggle. Here in the circumstances, what it looks like to me are professional police officers using the means by which they have to subdue an arrestee.
But the problem is, you know, you have that iron railing. You have the concrete steps. You have inviting the cop. I mean, you know, yes, in the big picture of things, this might not be the most violent kind of interaction, but there was violence here.
True. And any time that a defendant resists arrest in one form or another, there will be violence either on the part of the defendant or on the part of the arresting officer. And the sentencing guidelines provide that it's in every not in every circumstance in which that there is an individual resists arrest, in an individual where an individual fights, that the sentencing guideline would be imposed in this case. Additionally, I think the biting issue is one that I think the court focused on, and I think it's a good point to go to, which is we don't know. It's conceded that there was a bite. It was conceded that there was a very small cut that required a tetanus shot, antibiotics, and
well, fortunately, he didn't bite his finger off, that we would know who the officer was. It seems to me that if you buy your argument for these cases, anybody can resist arrest up to a point where it shocks the conscience, maybe. Is that right?
I think maybe it would even go to a lesser degree. I don't think shock the conscience argument standard is the one that necessarily would
I don't either, but that seems to be the thrust of these cases.
Well, I mean, the cases that the vast majority of the cases that impose the sentencing guidelines are ones where dangerous instrumentalities are used. Even those cases in which a defendant was biting, the only two reported cases that I'm aware of are individuals where an inmate who knew that he was HIV positive, in one particular case, Moore, he knew that he was HIV positive and was acting with the stated intent of trying to infect a prison guard. There's no evidence here, of course, that my client was HIV positive, that there's no actual intent that or evidence of how the bite occurred other than it happened during the melee.
Right, but the problem was, you know, you had this, like I said, this steel banister. It's icy. They're concrete steps. He pushes Officer Franks down to the edge of the stoop. He collides with the pavement. And then it's after that when the other officers then get involved to try to subdue him. That's when he bites. So he goes beyond, you know, maybe up to the bite, perhaps, you know, I could buy your argument. But then he still continues to resist, and then he does, you know, he bites him and continues to kick. So, I mean, I think it's a little more than what you're, I understand why you're making that argument, but I think it's a little more than what you are trying to characterize it as.
Well, well, of course, the district court agrees with you, mm-hmm. Judge. And the point I think also is that we're sitting here now trying to recreate the circumstance. And, of course, as the appellate court, we have to rely on the record. And the district court has to rely on what's before it then. At that point, there really isn't much evidence. We can speculate that it was that what was happening. But it seems to me that there was not sufficient evidence presented in that respect, Judge. I think that we can say that they went down the stairs, that they either fell, they pushed. It was a number of different explanations for what happened. I argue that in the absence of any evidence, it could have been like offensive linemen going up or down the stairs or off the stoop. We don't know. Yes, it was the court, I think, speculated that it was slippery because it was winter. I don't believe that there was evidence presented that it was, in fact, slippery.
That's what the photo shows. Ice, snow. We can infer that it's slippery.
I will leave it to you to look at the photograph and see what that says.
One of the reasons why we defer to district courts and on these judgments and have the standard of review that we do is because once appellate courts start laying down categorical rules based on facts, we get into trouble. And what you're basically asking for is a reading of the case law that suggests that the defendant has to be going for a weapon or wielding a weapon or has to actually inflict serious bodily injury for this enhancement to apply. In other words, that those things are necessary conditions. And that's just not what those cases stand for, nor would that be a good appellate rule to lay down as a categorical matter. Do you have a response to that?
Sure. I don't believe I'm asking for a categorical bright-line test for the court to impose, but I think once the court reviews the cases that have been presented by myself and my learned counsel, that you will see that this is probably the least serious fight under all these cases, that this would be the most permissive reading of the rule here. And so naturally, when we get to the boundaries of case law, is why we are here and arguing those points. If there are no more questions, I'm happy to answer more, but the brief speaks for itself. I think the argument is clear, and I'll leave the rest of my time to my counselor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Archer.
Good morning. Joe Archer for the United States. It's obvious that the court is familiar with the facts and the record. Apparently the photograph helped as well.
Very much so, and especially having it in color.
Not very colorful, though. It doesn't come off as being very colorful.
No.
Thank you, Judge Sykes, for mentioning the standard of review. I think that the ultimate question, I disagree with Mr. Carlin, is really how much discretion or how much deference are we going to pay the district court? And I would urge you not to try to establish some metric or litmus test for what constitutes substantial risk and allow the district court to make the judgment in these kinds of cases. I'm not suggesting this is on the edge or far away from the edge of the most violent encounter we're ever going to see, but as you can see, it's a very violent encounter. I think that the bite of the police officer's finger is some indication of the ferociousness of this defendant and his intent to try to cause injury to these officers and resist the arrest. If there are any questions of me, I'd be pleased to answer. Otherwise,
nope.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hartzler. Mr. Carlin, anything else?
No, thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the third case.